It's the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America. The National Security Hour exposes the wolves in sheep's clothing and their nefarious plots to undermine and destroy U.S. national security.
Welcome to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio, where you will hear the voice of freedom, the out loud truth. I'm your host, Mary Fanning. Today you're about to hear some out loud truth from an American hero, Nate Kane. Nate Kane is an FBI whistleblower. He's a military veteran who stands for the America First principles. You can't imagine his story and the bravery and what he did on behalf of this country. Nate Kane is running for office. Welcome, Nate Kane. It's an honor to have you here and an honor to meet you.
Thank you, Mary, for having me on. I appreciate it. And thank you for many of the stories that you've brought forward and information that's gone out to the American people. It's very important that the American people understand what's going on in our country.
It is, and I think some of the things that you have done to bring that to the American people, they should know that you're a cybersecurity entrepreneur, an FBI whistleblower, running for office in West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District. You have a long track record of integrity, sacrifice for this country, courage, loyalty. The story that you bring gives such insight into the things that were going on behind closed doors in this country. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you came to be. Well, first, your career, if you could give us some background, and then how you became an FBI whistleblower.
Sure. So I started off joining the United States Army back in 1997. I was a student. I was married. I had one child and one on the way, and was a student at DeVry University. Was up to my eyeballs in debt and wondering what I was going to do to provide for my family. And so there was an advertisement for, you know, join the Army and we'll pay off your student loans. And so I decided to drop out of college and to go join the military. And I ended up going into the Army at a time before cybersecurity existed. They called it information assurance back then. And I ended up, you know, really just having an amazing experience of learning something right as it was kind of coming out into its prime. And I started off learning the top secret messaging switch within the Army. And then they did away with the equipment right after I got out of school. So I kind of got voluntold, hey, we want you to learn this new encryption system that we were using called the Motorola Network Encryption System. And then when I got out of the Army, that knowledge got me my first job working for DISA, Defense Information Systems Agency. So I was a contractor with them first and did some great work doing a lot of cybersecurity related work that had to do with their top secret, up to top secret email messaging system. Did some great work with White House communications, assisting with implementing the system down in the White House bunker. And then eventually moved on to work for the Navy. And while I went to work for the Navy, I was dealing with their vulnerability management system, and finally ended up going overseas they hired me as a government employee in the civil service for the United States Navy. I did a tour in Japan, and which I was able to take my family with me. And so we were there for 3 years in Japan at Yokosuka Naval Base. That was quite an experience because we were there during the big earthquake and tsunami nuclear meltdown. So
yeah,
we got separated for a little while they were doing that. But while I was there, I worked in the command cave doing the cybersecurity for their simulation and modeling war games. And so that was a lot of fun. And then we went to Hawaii after that for 3 years. That was probably one of my favorite places that I've ever lived in terms of just the natural beauty and the weather. You know, I had the best commute in the world. I got to kayak across Pearl Harbor to work every day, which was really awesome.
And a great way to fill in shape.
Yeah. And so while I was there, I was learning the new vulnerability management system that was just been, you know, brought into bear for the by DISA and for the Department of Defense. And eventually that system went on to, you know, be used by multiple federal agencies, which later is what ended up getting me my job at the FBI. But I left Hawaii for a job with Marfor Cyber, which was the Marine Forces Cyber Command. And it was while I was there that I first got inducted really into the intelligence community, because even though it was a military unit and I was a Marine civilian embedded with a bunch of Marines, our job was protecting national critical infrastructure. So I went through the FANEX Cyber Corps training, where I learned, you know, about hacking and about defending against hackers and that sort of thing at NSA's school. And then I was detached to NSA, our unit was, and I was on what they call a DCI hunt team, where we basically go after hackers inside the network and inside our systems. And it was exciting work. It was one of my favorite jobs I've ever done. The camaraderie and that sense of, you know, team that, you know, I had when I was back in my military days was totally there. It was really great. But
so protecting our national security and our data probably included solar winds, right?
It was interesting because we had a lot of things that kind of went down, you know, around that time, and I can't get too much into it, but yeah, a lot of systems were utilizing solar winds, and it turns out, you know, of course, solar winds had that back door in it. But we were the onus of what our team's, you know, purpose really was to do was to find those backdoors, to find, we'd obfuscate ourselves going into a system, which is why we had to learn how to hack, because we would go into a system, hide ourselves in a system process, because we didn't want the bad actor to see us and see us basically watching them. And so we would basically get things in, you know, in position in order to completely extricate them out of the system, but also at the same time preserve evidence. And so my first job really was at the Pentagon with Joint Chiefs of Staff. And that was the first mission I had. And I can't get into the details of it, but it was very fascinating.
Yeah, we wouldn't want you to reveal anything that would put our nation at risk, particularly as we're facing a two-front war.
Without a doubt. But we had, it was a great opportunity. And one of the things that that I learned in that experience was this, the way that we do our work, the way that we find is you know, it really works very much like how I imagine how a detective, you know, would go and investigate. You know, they have a team of people that are looking at evidence and things like that. And you're looking at leads and you're following them down and you're seeing, you know, does this lead to anywhere? And there's probably, you know, a number of stories that I get into that, but it's very fascinating. We'll save that for another time. But I ended up getting offered while I was working at NSA, and I was, while I was at NSA, I got read on to FISA 702 intelligence authorities. You know, I was part of the SIGINT, all of those intelligence and surveillance systems. I was read on to those programs, and I had a lot of concerns about them because, you know, they were pretty powerful systems, but there were some things in place to protect people's constitutional rights. However, at the end of Obama's term in office this last month, he removed a lot of those protections. And I believe that was done intentionally in order to prepare the FBI to be able to start Operation Crossfire Hurricane to set up Donald Trump. So I ended up getting offered a position at the FBI. I got asked to to do an interview, and it was twice the salary of what I was making. So it was pretty hard to turn down. But it was going back to being a contractor. And so I went in for the interview, and they had had several guys who had come in and had failed the interview. And so when I got offered the job, it was quite an honor. And I was pretty excited. I had a very good opinion of the FBI at that time and of the organization. And I had always had a great respect for law enforcement. I have family members that are in law enforcement. And so I was pretty excited and proud.
Our constitution, things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The foundation of what made this country, this God-given country, great.
That's right. Yeah. And I knew that, you know, there was important work that the FBI was doing in keeping our country safe, at least so I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I ended up going to work. I worked over a non-disclosed location in Washington, D.C. It was not at the J. Edgar Hoover building, but in a different location. And I was in the Information Assurance Division and was on the team. Specifically, what I was hired to do was to architect and deploy their vulnerability management system across all of their field offices and headquarters and satellite offices. So it was a huge enterprise job that was paying me quite well. I was hired as a subject matter expert, which of course is the highest category, highest paid category that you can have in the contracting world. And, you know, I really felt like, wow, you know, I finally arrived. And, but it didn't take long before I finally was faced with a very difficult choice to make. And it all started really one day when I came into work, and my government supervisor was, you know, having a kind of quieted, hushed conversation with my colleague. And so I walked over and I was like, hey, what's going on? And I was told at that time that that he had seen or had heard about somebody reading these transcripts that were from a conversation that was had on a chat system that is used at the FBI on the classified side. And when these conversations happen, they get transcribed because of their records management policies are very strict. They get transcribed and dumped in a location, and then they eventually get compartmentalized. Well, somebody had looked at these transcripts and had seen that they were discussing Hillary Clinton and the multiple cases that were being investigated against her. And this was at the time that, you know, the media was talking about the email server. Mm-hmm. But these were, and so I thought initially that might be what they were talking about. But apparently what was in this conversation were words like treason. And this is so big, it could cause, you know, the failure of government. It could bring down the government. Things like that were being said in this conversation.
And it was the first time we heard about SAP data, correct? No one knew about SAP data until that happened.
Yes. So this was all, you know, I never did see these transcripts. When I heard this, and what I heard was that they were going to cover it up because they thought Hillary Clinton was going to get elected, because that's what everybody was saying. And they were afraid that if she got elected and they went after her, that she would, you know, basically take them out and destroy their careers. And so they decided to, you know, cover it up, make it go away. And I couldn't believe what I was hearing. So I went looking for this information on the classified network at the FBI. And while I never did find those conversation files, what I did discover was a trove of classified documents that indicated that Hillary Clinton was under investigation by multiple field offices. They had highly credible evidence that had been reviewed by analysts, and that evidence dealt with basically four subjects or criminal code subjects that they were looking at. I'm not sure if these were divisions or if these were the, you know, actual, you know, however they categorized it, but it was money laundering. Most of them had to do with money laundering. There were several related to public corruption. You had a couple related to securities and exchange fraud. And there was one that was related to terrorism financing. And
boy.
And I was shocked.
Financing.
Yeah. I was shocked when I saw it.
But tell us, you know, we all thought as James Comey came out and made the announcements of what he had found, he lays out a downstream of this list of terribles and treason. And yeah. and for the first time we hear about SAPdata. Then what happens?
Well, so I at first thought, well, this is not true. They're going to indict her. I mean, I'm seeing all this evidence with highly credible ratings from various field offices with various analysts' notes. And they had the entire money trails. I mean, everything. So I ended up at first thinking, well, you know, they're going to indict her. But then Comey comes out in front of FBI headquarters at J. Edgar Hoover Building, and he gives this long speech. And he starts off with basically laying out all the crimes that she committed. And I'm thinking, you know, and this was related to the email server, so not related to any of the stuff that I was looking at. But I'm thinking, oh, this is it. They're getting ready to indict her, and they're going to, you know, they're going to do it on the basis of what he's saying. Because you'll remember one of the things that Comey had brought up was that there were seven email chains that had SAPs in her, you know, on her email server. And most Americans have no idea what a SAP is, but a SAP is a special access program that is top secret and is compartmentalized and has a, you know, a cover sheet you have to be read on to even be able to see it. So in other words, I had a top secret clearance my entire career, but it didn't mean I had access to see any SAPs. So they say a lot of people refer to it as above top secret. It's really not above it. It's just, it's compartmentalized. And so you can't access it, even if you have a top secret, unless you're read on. No, yeah. It means you have to have a need to know.
That's right. And it's special access programs. Right. And it's only for those that have been read in. This commercial break from our sponsors who helped bring this information, this voice of truth to the American people on America Out Loud.
Whether you're an independent, a Democrat, or a Republican, one thing remains true. Airborne viruses love us equally. You've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the advanced nasal solution Cofix RX. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. Did you know that doctors and nurses have been swabbing their noses with povidone iodine to protect from airborne threats like colds, flus, and pandemic-era strains for decades? Cofix RX took that idea and made a more complete nasal formula with lasting cleansing effects. Maybe you're traveling soon or going to an event. Are you concerned somebody nearby might be sick? Maybe the office or classroom stresses you out. Get yourself a bottle of Cofix RX nasal solution. Spray goodbye to colds and flus with a Cofix RX nasal solution cleanse. That's COFIXRX.com. Save 20% by using promo code OUTLOUD at COFIXRX.com.
You already know Genesis plus HOCL is your best defense against viruses. But did you also know it's the most powerful weapon for eliminating airborne mold too? Customers are raving about the Genesis Fogger's ability to tackle mold problems and the bad smells that go with them. And we all know mold is a hazard to your health. There's no airborne invader that Genesis can't handle. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you're ready for anything.
The pandemic may be over for some, but millions of Americans are needlessly suffering from the long-haul effects of toxic spike protein from COVID-19 and the vaccines. You've heard Dr. Peter McCullough and his team at The Wellness Company discuss the harmful effects of spike protein in your body, and now they found the solution, the miracle enzyme nattokinase. Their spike support formula contains nattokinase, the most compelling and scientifically supported approach to safely clear spike protein out of the body. What's more, spike support is optimized with other all-natural, non-GMO ingredients, like dandelion root, to help prevent spike protein from binding to your cells. Everyone should take daily spike support so you can feel your best. America Out Loud listeners can go to OutLoudCare.com today and use code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order.
So welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio, where you will hear the voice of freedom, the out loud truth. I'm your host, Mary Fanning, and with us today on the National Security Hour is Nate Kane, a man who had a look on the from the inside as to what was taking place in our government, and he came forward, like many have not, as a whistleblower. Nate, where we left off, we were talking about SAP information. That's important because you're not able to view that data. It's a special access program, and only if you have a top security clearance are you allowed to see it, case specific. We didn't even know that SAP existed until James Comey mentioned that Hillary was letting SAP data out.
That's right. So there were seven email chains in that included SAPs, and he listed out a long list of classified mishandling. Some would argue Espionage Act, crimes. Because you do not need to have intent. And he made it a point to talk about intent, but intent is not required for charges under the Espionage Act and through mishandling classified information. But the thing that was striking to me was he mentioned two things that caught my attention. One, he mentioned the SAPs. And in order to even get a SAP out of a SCIF, which is a secure compartmentalized information facility, mm-hmm. You're not going to be able to do that unless you jump through a series of hoops. It's not like you can just, print out some documents, take them out, or put it on a thumb drive. There's no possibility for that. So, she had to have, or somebody had to have willfully brought that information out of a SCIF, violating known requirements and, classification handling procedures. Then to put it onto an unclassified server, which would have been against the law. But the other thing that he mentioned that really caught my attention was he said that they had confirmed that her email server had been compromised by foreign countries. And I believe he even, suggested that China was one of them. So I had grave concerns about that. And I thought, holy crap, there's no way this woman is not going to get arrested. But then he said, right after all of this, he says, but no reasonable prosecutor would bring a case against this. And I thought to myself right then and there, that's when I realized that the rumors were true, that they had every intention of covering up Hillary Clinton's crimes. And at that point, that's when I had to make a decision. And so I spent a few weeks in prayer, actually, and asking God to show me and reveal to me whether, how I would do this and whether I was supposed to do this. And I knew the risks that were involved. I knew the likelihood is that I could go through all of this. Nothing happens except that I get exposed and, have my life threatened or my freedom, threatened and, my family put through hell. Mm-hmm. But I knew in the end, I knew what I needed to do. And I could not sit by and ignore it. And in addition to that, I was watching on C-SPAN when Devin Nunes and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, they were investigating a lot of these matters that were specifically related to the documents that I had. And so I made the decision that the safest bet for me was to reach out directly to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, Chairman Devin Nunes. And because unfortunately, all the documents that I had, they were riddled with names like James Comey and especially the stuff related to Uranium One, also had Robert Mueller, even the ICIG, Michael Atkinson, who was the head of the public corruption unit at the time of the
was publicly corrupt.
Yes. And kind of ironic. And then Rod Rosenstein, too, who was also he was the acting AG. Okay. Time because you had Jeff Sessions, who essentially had removed him things from himself or recused himself from all things related to Hillary. So I was really in a pickle because I couldn't go through my chain of command because my chain of command was basically involved. And so I ended up deciding to take these documents directly to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Now I had investigated and I did some research, and I found out that under the law, I was authorized to take documents and give them to the intelligence committees. And I had a courier card, so I was authorized to carry classified information outside the FBI. So it was kind of a no-brainer, but the problem I had was, how do I connect with them without revealing anything, you know, because I knew about the surveillance tools from my time at the NSA, and I knew the likelihood is, you know, especially if there's corruption because of the FBI having their own liaison over at the NSA, that the likelihood is that they are probably spying on the HPSI. And and I was concerned that if I went through normal procedures and, you know, went through the front door, that they would be led on to, you know, the fact that I was blowing the whistle. So I reached out to a YouTuber named Bill Still, who had a YouTube channel called The Still Report. And and he had done some stories on where he had interviewed Bill Binney and I think some other whistleblowers. And so I thought, well, maybe this guy has some connections. And plus, he always ended his show with a Bible verse. And, you know, and I knew he was a Christian. And so I reached out to him with a Proton Mail account and said, hey, I'll only talk to you on Proton Mail, but I need help blowing the whistle. And he got back to me within, you know, the hour. And so we started communicating, and he reached out to a connect that he had with Devin Nunez's office. And next thing you know, we had a clandestine meet set up. And so, so I carried on October 31st.
Let me ask you, was the time frame that you connected with Bill Binney and then went to Devin Nunez?
So I connected with Bill Still, and he had interviewed Bill Binney. But Bill Still, he ended up, I reached out to him. It took us a while to figure this out. And so it was months. So when it was after the press call that Comey had done in front of FBI building. So it was after that, and I would say it was probably at least like maybe a month after that, that I reached out to Bill Still. I had to try to figure out a way to get this information over. And then
It's interesting because with Dennis Montgomery's data, he supplied a thumb drive of encrypted data that you had to have the password to open the thumb drive, because this was SAP data. So no one could have access to this. And so Bill Binney worked with us. He delivered the encrypted thumb drive to none other than Devin Nunez. So we all took the appropriate steps, knowing that they had someone with the appropriate level of, that had a TSSEI with access to SAP data and a SCIF where they could view that data. Everything has to be done exactly right. So
that's right.
Bill Binney, while he delivered this, he did not have the encrypted code. And had he tried to open it, even the great Bill Binney, had he opened that encrypted thumb drive, it would have erased all data.
Yeah.
So you have to be very careful when you're, and who you're working with, but also how the data was handled that Montgomery was bringing forward, because he also, you know, holds a TSSCI with access to SAP case specific. So it's only certain things that you need to be read in on. But it's interesting that, you know, we all looked at the same chain of command where to go to get this to the right people.
Yeah. Well, they're under the law, the senior staff members to Devin Nunez are well, not to just Devin Nunez, but senior staff members to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence and the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence are authorized to receive classified information from anyone without question. So so that was really my only option other than going through the IG and through the, you know, the chain of command. But I took that information. I put it onto a thumb drive. I carried it out, and I was sweating bullets, man, that day, because I thought, you know, even though I had my courier card and I did everything in terms of classified handling the right way, I still couldn't help but think, you know, what if they stop me on my way out and they search me and, you know, they find this, how am I going to explain myself? But I got out
from prison.
I ended up, that's right. I ended up going to the botanical gardens. I walked over to the botanical gardens and waited for Bill to call me. And Bill called me. He drove up from South Carolina and he calls me. And while he's on the phone with me, the police pull him over and he's like, oh no, I'm being pulled over by the cops. And I'm thinking, my heart just sunk. And I thought, oh no, you know, we're going to jail. But he had just made a left turn where he shouldn't have. And so, you know, once he, I could hear everything going on in the background. So once he, you know, went on his way, he came around the corner and picked me up. And then we went up and we picked up a senior staff member to Devin Nunez. And for 3 hours, I debriefed him while we drove around in the car. And, so I gave him the thumb drive. I, you know, was going to show him my badge, and he actually told me, you know, it's better that I don't know who you are. And I was kind of surprised at that, but he explained to me that the HPSI had reason to believe that they were under surveillance by the FBI and other, you know, members of the intelligence community, and they were concerned about the safety of their whistleblowers. Now that shocked me. But at the same time, I knew that capability was there. And so I was right to be suspicious because I did not call.
One would think that our government would be most concerned about foreign entities getting into our most sensitive data that Hillary put at risk, put in a place where China and other adversaries had access to it, but they're going to go after the whistleblowers.
Yeah.
One would think that they would be delirious that they actually had someone with that was that honest, that was helping them to secure our highest level, most important data to make sure, because this is what spies
that's right
to do.
Well, during that conversation, this staffer asked me, he asked me if I would be willing to go back in and get intelligence data specific to Uranium One, because everything I had was financial data. And then I had some other documents in there about abuse of power. And like I had something in there about how the FBI had a contract with the Southern Poverty Law Center, and they were using them to identify, you know, homegrown extremist groups, which they were basically targeting Christians. And not, you know, not Antifa or BLM or anything like that. And they had something in there about election integrity, but there was a lot of interesting things I turned over, but they were most interested in Uranium One. And so they asked if I'd go back in and get intelligence documents that would show what the FBI knew and when they knew it. As it, you know, in other words, did they know about Rosatom's attempts to infiltrate our uranium supply chain prior to Uranium One being sold off? To, you know, or being approved by the CFIUS to be sold off to Rosatom. So I went back.
Let me interrupt. So our audience needs to understand what happens when our adversaries have our uranium. What does that give them the ability to do? And beyond which, when that Uranium One deal went through, they acted like it was a Canadian deal rather than that our uranium was going to Russia, correct?
That's correct. They acted exactly like it was a, oh, no big deal. This is just, you know, it's only going to go up to Canada. It'll never go to Russia. And we know that was not true. And that was that came out in a press release that I think Chuck Grassley revealed later that stuff did go to Russia.
But our audience needs to understand that when we're handing our uranium to our adversaries, they can make a nuclear weapon, particularly with the Club K, and launch it on our country, and it will have our own nuclear fingerprints on it, our own nuclear signature.
That's right. That's right.
That's.
Yeah. Yep.
How does Hillary get away with this?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I certainly handed over all of this information, and they had all of the evidence. And the documents that I found, by the way, actually showed that not only did Hillary know about this, but Robert Mueller knew, Rod Rosenstein knew, Michael Atkinson knew, of course, James Comey knew, and Obama knew, because I handed over Office of the Executive daily reports that had all this information and intelligence data in it. that showed that Obama was being briefed on all this stuff prior to that.
We have 3 minutes until our next commercials, but you know, it came out of WikiLeaks that Mueller delivered a uranium sample to Moscow. How do our top officials, how does anyone explain this?
Well, I don't know, but I'll tell you one thing for sure. It certainly made sense why they made Robert Mueller the special prosecutor to go after Trump, because they wanted to make sure that Trump would not be anywhere near the FBI or their data or intelligence so that he could not investigate what had gone on there. They kept him so busy and wrapped up with the whole Russia, you know, collusion story that he never had control over these agencies that as commander in chief, he should have been in control of.
Wow. I mean, this is breathtaking to think that we have our own top officials. Only did we find out from WikiLeaks that Mueller is the one who delivered this. Then they put him in place as the prosecutor. What, to make sure that he's not the one prosecuted? Because this looks like a cabal of traitors.
I agree. I think it was.
Who in their right mind hands the enemy our uranium? Now, as we go into this commercial with our wonderful sponsors that help bring this truth to the American people, it's important to understand that at the same time the Uranium One deal went through was the Gulftainer deal. So here's the guy who's just gone into a joint venture with Russia for the exporting of the Club K, who was on the Pentagon's blacklist, wanted for capture or kill. His family company, Gulftainers, being handed our cargo container operations at Port Canaveral. They bypass at the very same time as the Uranium One deal. Hillary's also involved with the people from Gulftainer. They're given birth in our country. They bypass CFIUS and the national security threat analysis. This is a national security nightmare. No one could have imagined that the top of our government was doing what they were doing. So, to our audience, after our sponsors, when we hear from them, we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Well, the Out Loud Truth was the rallying call that started it all. A wide spectrum of programming from world and political news to societal, your health, and cultural stories. 7 amazing years of news stories, informative podcasts, and great talk radio. America Out Loud Talk Radio, the liberty and justice for all.
In 2008, people could spend an average of 12 seconds on a task without becoming distracted. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds. The digital age is narrowing our attention span. Trouble concentrating or recalling information is frustrating, embarrassing, and kills productivity. Advanced Nutrition Company, Healthy Cell, created Focus and Recall to boost your brain power. And unlike other supplements that don't work, Focus and Recall is not a pill. It's a patent-pending gel you swallow with ultra-absorption of science-backed ingredients to help you immediately sharpen focus, concentrate longer, and strengthen recall. These physician-formulated gels come in a small gel pack. Tear off the top, shoot it down. Thousands of 5-star reviews proves it works. Supercharge your brain and see the difference. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order. Risk-free. Love it or your money back. Guaranteed. HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD.
Welcome back to the National Security Hour on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network on iHeartRadio, where you will hear the voice of freedom, the out loud truth, and today, the chilling history of treason that took place in this country and continues, and the danger this has put America in, nuclear danger. They brought the enemy inside the wire, but they couldn't have done it without traitors from within. Welcome back, Nate Kane. It's really chilling to hear what you're explaining to us and what took place. And, you know, I need you to continue to explain, but at the same time that they put through the Uranium One deal, The gatekeeper at CFIUS was Eamon Nabi Mir. He was working with Robert Mueller in his law firm. And so they had all bases covered. Eamon Nabi Mir's father was the founding member of ISNA, Islamic Society of North America. They were found to be a terrorist organization in the Holy Land Foundation trials. Eamon Nabi Mir was a two-time president of MINA, the youth group of ISNA. This is who was putting through these deals unbeknownst to the American people.
Yeah, not surprising to me, especially when you consider, I remember while I was at the FBI, they had all of these Islamic awareness, you know, days and things like that where we could actually get off of work, even as contractors, and go sit in some session, you know, to, you know, to hear some speaker or whatever. And I remember they had a guy who they had brought in, and I just did a quick search on him, and I was like, you know, he was an imam. And I remember reading that, you know, he had made, you know, statements about America being the great white Satan. I'm going, this is the guy they're bringing in, you know, to the FBI, you know, for us to meet with. So there was people who, you know, who clearly within the FBI that were, you know, buying into and you know, hook, line, and sinker to all of the wokeism that we're now seeing now.
Yeah, so probably not a surprise that John Brennan voted for Gus Hall and was a known communist. His grandfather was a member of the IRA. The IRA, that was an organization.
And Comey admitted to being a communist in college. So, you know, but I don't think he changed.
No, when he said, I used to be a communist, I don't know what I am now. I think he was hopeful to be an oligarch. What do you think?
I think you're right. Well, that's where communist leadership wants to be. You know, they want to be the elites, and they want everybody else to be the prawls.
But this was toward the destruction of America. They were selling out the country as though they were traitors working for another country. They were working in concert. If Mueller knew about this, and Rod and Comey and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, what should come next?
Well, don't forget Michael Atkinson. You know, remember, he was the one who changed the rules that allowed for them to impeach Trump, you know, over the Ukraine story, the Ukraine phone call. So, I mean, there was clearly
Mike Morrell was in on that as well.
Yeah. So this was a conspiracy, you know, within the FBI, within the intelligence community to do this, but primarily within the FBI and Justice Department, I think. And, you know, it started with them, you know, first changing their rules so that they could then unmask American citizens and pass that data, you know, over to the FBI. And there's so much corruption that was involved in this. There were so many people involved. Honestly, they all need to be tried for, you know, multiple crimes, and treason, you know, being one of them, but also for deprivation of rights under color of law, which also can carry a death penalty if somebody is killed in the process of that. But, you know, can carry a sentence of all the way up to, you know, life in prison.
Except they're still in power. The very same people are still in place and in power. And at the same time all this started coming forward, Judge Rosemary Collyer, at one time head of the FISA court, the date that we exposed the hammer, she put forward a FISA to destroy all data of illegal surveillance of Americans. That was illegal, what she was doing, for one. It was the destruction of evidence so people would not know that they had been under illegal surveillance. But we did a piece on Rosemary Collyer. We exposed and found the document that was never supposed to get out. It was a SAP document, and it got out, where she gave the order to destroy all this data. I mean, it's not just the traitors. Is it also?
There's judges involved, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's also about blackmail and leverage.
I was, you know, after I went through, so one of the things that I didn't really finish in the story was after I came back out with the second set of data, I got cut off. And so I ended up having to go through the process of formally filing with an attorney for the ICWPA, but we did it because Atkinson was involved. We had to go through the OJIG, Michael Horowitz. Now, he turned out to be a stand-up guy, and he backed me and protected me and gave me anonymity. And then eventually, you know, went through unprecedented steps to ensure that this data made it to both committees, even though we had everything against us, including Jeff Sessions refusing to give it a credibility rating. So Atkinson agreed to give it a credibility rating. Then when we tried to take it to the committees didn't want to take it from me because I was unwilling to give them my name and unwilling to testify because I knew as soon as my name came out that Democrats would leak it and I would end up, you know, I mean, this was dealing with Russian intelligence, so I didn't want to get killed. So yeah. I didn't want to end up, you know, being found with a suicide note and, you know, and two bullet rounds to the back of my head. So I ended up telling them not no, but hell no, I will not testify and I will not give you my name. And so then they didn't want to take the information. So we went back to Horowitz. Horowitz actually made the unprecedented move of having his senior staff member deliver it directly to both committees. And so we know it did make it into their hands. We know that at least within the House, we know that the House liaison, Cordon Hull, received it. He verified it, said that it did have national security implications and was of an urgent concern. And I thought I was done at that point. So, you know, I went home and I had a copy of the thumb drive because when we originally turned in everything, we asked, do you want the thumb drive? And we were told by IG Horowitz, no, you need to maintain that in case the committees don't do anything and you can have the right to take it to another committee like the judiciary or something like that. So I had the thumb drive and they asked me to print out everything. So I brought everything out and, you know, we handed over everything at St. John's Church. I sat in the front pew with a hoodie and sunglasses on and Michael Sakaris, my attorney, basically contacted them, told them where to meet us. And then he escorted them in and tapped me on the shoulder. And then I handed the package over my left shoulder. I didn't want them knowing who I was. I didn't want them catching a picture of me, hearing my voice, nothing. I did not trust any of these people, but like I said, Horowitz's office turned out to be genuinely, you know, for the people. And so for other whistleblowers out there, I will tell you, he will go to great lengths to protect you as much as he can and help to make sure that information gets out. Now, I ended up afterwards, a few months had gone by, and then eventually one day the FBI raided my house. And I had 16 agents or so in my house. They detained me, went through all of my, you know, home. And it was a very difficult time, you know, for my family. We went through a lot of stuff that should never have happened. But one of the things that became clear to me after I got exposed because the FBI leaked the raid as well, which I think honestly, you know, put me at risk of my life. But they also, I had, I think it was the Daily Caller had done a FOIA request to the Maryland magistrate to ask them, you know, was Nate Kane or was the judge notified that Nate Kane or Dennis Nathan Kane was a whistleblower protected under the ICWPA at the time the search warrant was given? And it was a different judge that put a seal on that answer. And now I got to go back and look at the name of that judge because the name of the judge that you're mentioning sounds awfully familiar. But there were two judges involved, you know, and so one of them that gave the search warrant and then one that put a seal on the answer as to whether or not, you know, I whether that judge was notified. Both of them were females. There was definitely corruption that went on. I am almost certain that I had a FISA warrant opened up on me, much like Carter Page, probably, I'm sure, that they lied in order to get it. But for 2 years after I blew the whistle, which I believe was a violation of my constitutional rights and my Fourth Amendment. So there were some serious problems that were going on. And again, when you have this apparatus, though, that can spy on everybody, you know, where basically your phone becomes a spying device, a bug, a listening device. You know,
it's like a chip, just like you put in your dog.
That's right. It basically, it means that every judge, every congressman, every public official that you know, has a phone or has an internet connection, you know, has a smartphone or an internet connection or does anything, you know, has GPS, it means that everything that they do is potentially being spied on. And so you're going to find out a lot of dirt about a lot of people when you're watching them all the time. And I really do believe that this is partly what's going on, is that you have some that are bribed and you have some that have been blackmailed. And if they can't find them, if they can't find something on them, they find something on their family members and they go after them. So you have a massive, I think, spy ring going on in America today that is utilizing, it's weaponized our tools that were meant for terrorists. You know, many of the libertarians out there, you know, warned about this thing. And even though I was one of those, I was a Republican, but I, you know, I had those libertarian leanings and I was like, you know what, this does not look good. Even after 9/11, I thought this will be turned against Americans at some point.
And this is turning into a totalitarian police state. And it's no accident that you were raided. Montgomery was raided. Montgomery also went to Horowitz. Benny Wiebe. In fact, Benny came forward and had to give a sworn statement that he puts his reputation behind Dennis Montgomery because they are so good at putting out disinformation, attempting to destroy reputations. So people don't know what to think.
It's true. We had talked about this, I think, when we first, you know, when you first called me, is that there's a clear, concerted effort to turn patriots against each other. And so they have spread a lot of disinformation about, you know, a lot of people. And I don't think that everybody is directly involved, but I think they're indirectly involved because they get told something from somebody that they trust. And the next thing they know, they're looking at people with suspicion. And then they're, you know, sharing that information with other people. And so it becomes a big old ring of gossip. And this is something that we have to, as Americans, we have to be very careful. We have to make sure that we look into information ourselves, that we should not just believe something that we hear, you know, just because somebody told us, but we have to, you know, use our best judgment and do our homework and do our research ourselves. And so, I'd heard those things too. And so I now, you know, I'm realizing, especially I had some involvement with the election integrity effort after 2020. Man, I saw so much backstabbing and so much just disinformation being passed around, you know, within the different teams that were down there, that I have no doubt that a lot of that was FBI and intelligence, you know, operatives that were spreading information in order to, you know, to divide us and conquer us.
And they infiltrate into the groups that are trying to save the country. And
that's
then
right.
they spin things up. And, you know, one person in particular, Rush Limbaugh, had outed him. He had been Hillary Clinton's disinformation agent. And then he starts inserting himself on the right, pretending to be one of the good guys. Unfortunately, he'd written a piece where he admitted to working as Hillary Clinton's disinformation agent with Sid Blumenthal. So people, I mean, right now, this country is inside out, upside down. And how do you look at this and how can you look to take back this country beyond people voting for you? Let me stay right there. Voting for you.
There's a couple of things. One, first and foremost, and this is something that everybody needs to understand and they need to come to accept. We are not going to take back this country, no matter who we have in office, if we don't have God on our side. This is a spiritual war just as much as it is a physical one. Nate Kane is not going to save the country. Donald Trump is not going to save the country. God may use people, you know, like myself, like the president, like others that are willing and are, you know, brave and courageous and have, you know, integrity. But at the end of the day, we need some miracles. I mean, there are some really, really bad people that have a lot of power. And, you know, we're not in a position to win this war without the help of God. And so I believe we need divine intervention here. I think we need providence on our side. And so people need to be praying. They need to be asking for God to help us resolve this issue. The second thing is that our founders were very, very wise men. I believe that when you look at the Constitution, there are provisions in there for circumstances that we're in right now. And this is exactly why they created the separation of powers. It's why they had the separation of powers between both the, you know, the forms of government, but also between the state power and federal power. I think the states need to take back their power, and I think they need to exercise it. And we're seeing that, like in West Virginia, where you've had multiple lawsuits brought against the federal government that we've won at the Supreme Court.
We're going into our final minute. Your final statement, please let the American people know in your last final minute with us. We so appreciate you having come on.
No problem. So the last thing I'll say is there are things that can be done. An Article I tribunal is a congressional tribunal that can be set up. We have one right now that exists with the U.S. Task Court. We need another one today that's specifically to address these issues of abuse of power. And it's something that I intend to fight for and encourage my fellow colleagues in Congress to bring about if I'm elected. People can find out more about me by going to my campaign website at Nate Cain, that's NateCain, the number 4, WV, like West Virginia, .com. That's Nate Cain for WV.com. And I would ask that people consider supporting my campaign. I'm definitely doing this as a grassroots effort. And
do you have a Twitter handle?
I do. Nate Cain for WV is my Twitter handle. And they can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Gab, Truth Social, and Getter.
Well, Nate, first, thank you so much for joining us. And I hope that our listeners will support your campaign. You have stood up to save this country. And I cannot encourage our listeners enough. I hope you'll come back, but for today, thank you for joining us on the mission. The National Security Hour is the tip of the spear in the epic battle to defend the United States of America.